Blog Talk Radio.
No more back thinking, time for thinking. World has changed so very much. What it used to be, there's so much more opportunity. Oh, wake up, each way. Maybe then what you have to say. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Russell Price Morning Show, the documentary podcast, pulling your eyelids open in the DMV. We want to welcome a special guest, Sherry Christie. She is a wonderful woman who is doing wonderful works in the DMV with the youth. Tell us a little bit about your company and who you are. Welcome aboard.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Mr. Russell. We really appreciate this. My name is Sherry Christie. I'm a native Washingtonian. I have to always put that out there because that's extremely important. I work with youth and young adult organizations across the DMV, helping them and to have a platform with the information that they have out there and all the wonderful work that they're doing with the youth across the city. A lot of times the youth don't get positive feedback that they should, positive notification that they should across the world and across the city. So I'm here and put in this position to make that happen. The organizations that fall organization, which is Groundbreakers Baseball Academy, as well as Zion's Daughters Dance Ensemble Incorporated. I partner with Minister Marjorie B. Gorham Jones and Aziza Peace Youth Programming with Ms. Saran Fawcett. I believe that as parents and supporters, whatever our children are involved in, every single resource we have should be pushed towards those organizations to help those organizations so that they can continue to do the work that is needed. They need the funding. So the things that are being done, we need to push all of our resources towards it, whatever our children are involved in. And I've done that, and I continue to do that.
I want to ring a bell for you because what you said is a true, true, powerful statement. A lot of people, including adults and people who have been successful in the DMV area, don't understand exactly what you said and the concept of what you're doing. It's powerful what you're doing. Our youth need you. They need you because they're doing positive things. All youth are not doing negative, derogatory things. They're doing positive things. And I want to commend your husband for doing a baseball team, coaching a baseball team. In the black community, baseball is not what I call prevalent like other sports. Baseball is supposed to be the American sport. Coach, tell us how you got so involved to start a baseball team or to coach a baseball team. What made you do this and what inspires you as a black man to do a baseball team?
Well, I would first say I grew up playing, so, you know, I'm not a native Washingtonian like my wife. I was born in Jamaica in the West Indies. I grew up in the Bronx, New York. And, you know, I got introduced to baseball by a best friend. You know, I was a track guy, soccer guy, got introduced to baseball, you know, and fell in love with it. You know what I mean? And I played high school. I played college. I played overseas with the military. I was in the Marine Corps for a while until I hurt my throwing arm. I was on track, you know, for pro ball and all that stuff, you know, learned the politics of baseball, how it becomes a business at the higher levels, you know, and what ended up happening, you know, I just kept doing me, and then, you know, God was chasing me for a while, telling me, hey, I need you to do this, I need you to do this. But like all of us, we still want to do us, right? We want to do me. And when I finally said yes, everything opened up. You know, I started it. My wife assisted me with it. I followed the vision, the dream God had for it. I put down the blueprint and then just started engaging young people. And, of course, the first person we engaged, just like my wife said, was whatever our kids and we put all the resources was my son. He was the first one. And then we started bringing young people in, his friends, other kids, and then, you know, kids want to be around other kids doing positive things. They don't always just want to be around kids doing negative. And once we started doing that, it just blossomed. You know, we started first, we were just training kids in the DMV. We had about 100-plus kids, not charging a dime, whether they lived in Maryland, D.C., or Virginia. They just come to the field. We train them. They go back to their schools, do what they do. Then we were with another organization, and they just were not working for the families and for the young people. It was just about the numbers and the money. So we got away from that. Six families went with us. We started Groundbreakers Baseball Academy. And, of course, the first 2 to 3 years, we took our lumps, and now we're in our 6 years of existence. We're 11 championships later. We've traveled to 25 states in the U.S. We have about 24 kids on our roster. They're now going to the 17U age. We're about to send 5 to 6 of them to college. This is our first ambassador group going to college, and everybody be coming right behind them going to schools. And the thing about it that's beautiful is that we're 99% chocolate. You know, we have 2 Caucasian kids, a couple Hispanics, but our roster is 99% chocolate. And we get out there across the country showing them, hey, we not only look the part, we're smart, we know how to play the game, we're intellectual, and we're going to come and dominate you with a smile, right? It's not the perception you see that, hey, you know, chocolate kids are a bunch of thugs, they don't know how to represent themselves. No, our young people, we teach them. We do holistic development all the way around, spiritual development, community involvement, mental and physical toughness. We deal with everything, academic enrichment, just to make sure when they leave and they go on, they're going to be able to take a seat at the table. No one will give them a seat. They'll be able to pursue their greatness wherever that goes. But the thing that they always remember, they have their brotherhood here in this G3 family, as well as they're going to go back to the community they came from and whichever community they reside in now and give back and have a positive impact.
Excellent, excellent. They're like a miniature Negro League, man, a little Negro League in 2021. You have a Negro League that is doing something positive that will go down in history. Sherry, tell us about your input with the organization and the nonprofit. How did you become a nonprofit, and what made you do what you do?
It was more so of a passion. You know, growing up, I grew up on Lexington Place in Northeast D.C. in between 6 and 7 D and E. The values that were the foundation and the values that were laid on the block that we grew up and in the neighborhood that we grew up, we were a family. You know, it doesn't matter where, whose house you lived in, everybody disciplined you. Everybody took care of you. Good, bad, or indifferent. That same mantra, it got lost somewhere. And so that passion that I had for that and that hunger that I had for that to continue and for our children to receive that, it was very important. So moving forward, as our children, we got married and had kids, we started talking about how we wanted that picture to look for our children. What did we want to develop for our family? How did we want that foundation to look? What did we want to pour into not just our kids, but their friends, everybody who they were associated with? We wanted our kids to understand that if you attach to us, then you will win. You know, we're going to have a God-fearing, we're going to have that foundation that is needed, and we're going to reach out to our elders. My mom is still living. Thank her for everything that she's instilled. My aunt, she's a teacher. I call her the mayor of Capitol Hill, Miss Frances Slaughter, and my mother, Marquita Slaughter Cook. these people and our families have laid foundations that we have to continue to have a snowball of positivity. You know, you get tired of always hearing negative, 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 negative. So that passion that I have, I'm like, look, no, I'm not hearing anything. If you're not speaking life, I'm going to have to cut you off at the root. And that goes for anything attached to me. If you're not speaking life, it has to be cut off. You know, that's not something that is going to help us to continue to grow and to continue to prosper together. So that's what going into the nonprofit and how I got involved and the passion is really, I can just continue to talk about that. And everybody that I meet and everybody that I connect with, I want them to know and to understand that this is not for show. You know, lives are in jeopardy. Our households are in jeopardy. You know, solid foundation. Our households need leaders, and they need born leaders. So in order to have born leaders, we have to speak a specific way, but also our actions are very important. You can't just show up for the photo op. You have to show up even when the light is dim and the light is dark. You got to show up for the work that is needed for our kids, for ourselves, and for our livelihood.
You are saying everything that I believe in and people of positivity believe in. There's more people like you are needed in the world. When it comes to our youth, sometimes they're overlooked. And people don't realize the power of our youth, and the youth are the future. And it's people like you and your husband who's taken the time to shine youth, put them in the spotlight, and let people know what they do. Tell us about the organization, the concept of the organization, about how the organization is helping youth organizations shine what they do. Tell us about that concept and what you do to get that word out.
Well, I actually partner. I call it a partnership. So when I come on board and I'm introduced to an organization, I observe first. I may observe you for a little bit of time, and then I may observe you for a longer period of time. And then, of course, before I'm doing the observation and I'm doing my research, then I'm praying first and I'm asking God for direction. That's first and foremost. I'm asking God for direction in regards to partnerships because we cannot partner with everyone. We have to listen, understand, and be obedient. And then in that, everybody's not going to understand, oh, well, why did you end up going over here as opposed to go over there? Well, first of all, it's not me. I'm following God's direction, and I'm handling God's business in regards to kingdom building. You don't have to always do that just in the walls of a church. We are the church. You know, we step outside of the walls, and we build communities. We build upon. So that's how I actually go about it. I actually pray, and I ask God for direction. Sometimes he'll just say, you know, hey, I'm going to need you to go over here. You know, I'm going to pray and I'm going to move. And I have to be very, very outspoken in regards to that because he's going to answer your prayers. God's going to answer your prayers. So that foundation is going to walk with me everywhere I go. And I'm not going to be silent about it because that's how our blessings come. That's how we end up helping one another, extending an olive branch to one another. Now, all the time, it doesn't always connect because everybody might not be where you are at that moment or in that present state. So after the observation and, of course, the prayer first and the observation, then I speak with the head of that organization or that business, and I ask them questions, and I meet with them, you know, because we have to be on the same page as we continue to help each other, and transparency saves lives. So I don't need a pitch. We don't need a pitch to one another. we need to know that the work that needs to be done, we're going to get it done by any means necessary. We're going to connect with the right people. We're going to make the right connections. My mind is moving faster than my mouth. So if you hear me pause a lot of time, it's like I'm praying and I'm talking because I want to make sure that you're not necessarily hearing me, but hear the words that are coming out of my mouth. And understand where I'm coming from because it's all from my heart. And I'm very, very passionate about what I'm doing. And I play no games. So when I'm coming in, you know, with a level of expectancy for us to win, for us to prosper, for us to do what we need to do, when we need to do it, and how we need to do it.
Well, I can hear in your voice passion of what you're doing. You're doing it because it's sincerely something in your heart that's driving you. It's sincerely a mission to better our youth and to spotlight our youth. And just talking to you, I realized that Black History Month is what we do. We've been doing this 45 years, celebrating 45 years of publishing. But this is going to be a special Black History Month activity. We're going to have a nice little banquet event. And I want to make sure, and I want to tell you this right now, I want to ring the bell. I want you to have one of the Living Legacy Awards that night. I want people to see there's a woman like you and your husband are doing it for real. And they need you. I mean, they need you. You also inform me you have other organizations that you work with. How many organizations do you actually work with?
Right now I'm working with three organizations. Ms. Saran Fawcett in Baltimore, her organization is called Aziza Peace Youth Programming, and Minister Marjorie B. Gorham of Zion's Daughters Dance Ensemble Incorporated, my partner, my friend, my sister. I've been working with her since our daughter was 8 years old. She's now 20, and we've been breaking ground on many things, and we have been toiling, and we have been working out here and partnering and working with so many different people. So right now, that's where I am with the organizations that I work with, in between three and five. The other two organizations, we're still in conversation. Prayerfully, after they hear this, they will understand that what I'm doing is not for show. It's not, you know, I'm going to work. When the cameras are on and they're taking pictures of everybody else, I'm going to be in the background working. I'm going to be in the background to make sure that what we are doing is something that you have to understand that there's so much work to be done. And a lot of times behind the scenes, it might be one or two people. But when I come, I don't come alone. I come with a whole army of support. And some people, they want me to say who they are. And some people is like, nah, I'll just come. I'll just show up. You know, and I appreciate that. I have a very good friend, Ayana Thomas, with Liberty Rights. I have a wealth of partnerships. I don't want to start naming different people, but I just appreciate because I don't come by myself. I come with my entire family as a support system, and everybody knows that when we step, we're not stepping by ourselves. We step together in unity for support and help. Financial help, as well as just toiling the ground, you know, and getting out there and doing the work that's needed.
Excellent, excellent. I mean, you have a whole group of people that believe in you and believe in what you're doing, and they support you. How many children do you have?
We have three kids. So we have Genesis, she's our oldest, and she's 20. We have Seth, he just turned 17. And we have Trinity, and she's our youngest, and she's 15. And they all go through and have been educated in the D.C. public school system. They're very smart and intelligent. Our oldest, he's a student at George Mason. And our son, he goes to Dunbar. And our daughter, she attends McKinley.
I want to ask Coach a question. Coach, by you having a lovely wife like you have, how is it to work with your wife and to have the partnership with your wife, which is not an easy thing to do for a lot of people? Tell us about how that works for you with your wife.
Oh, man, it's easy. But at first, you know, we had to learn, and she had to remind me of this, is we don't let, you know, business really come into the home. Like, if it comes into home, it's really brainstorming ideas, thinking about, you know, what else we can do. But for the most part, you know, we try to keep that separated where home becomes home, because, like you said, we still have these young children in the house, and they need time. They need your attention, obviously. We need time and attention on our relationship, and, you know, that's how we make it work.
That is super fantastic. I mean, you really should write a book about your relationship as a husband and wife, as a father and a mother, as about a youth activist. You know, activist. You should really write a book, because your story needs to be told. It should be made into one of those movies for TV, because it's, I can hear the voices of talking to you on this interview, this podcast interview, that you really are a solid family, a real solid family. And as a black man, I like to see that, and you have that. So you're blessed with that. You really are. You're blessed to have what they call a real solid family. Sherry, tell me, who are the three people that has influenced you the most?
The three people that have influenced me the most.
Yeah, three people that
my
have
mother,
influenced.
Oh, that influenced me the most. My mother, my mother, Marquita Slaughter Cook. I've watched her, her strength, her endurance, her ability to not to allow adversities of the world to intertwine. You know, my aunt, Miss Frances Slaughter, of course. Like I said, I call her the mayor of Capitol Hill. She's a early childhood development teacher. She has her own entity program, Capitol Hill Cooperative Nursery School. And the third would have to be my father, who's no longer with us, Oscar Johnson, and my Johnson family. I have to say that. You know, those would be the three most influential people, you know, and I can go on, of course, my grandparents, you know, because that foundation wouldn't be there if it had not been for Eloise Moore Slaughter and Walter Slaughter Sr. I can just go on and on. My Lexington Place family, I mean, I know you only asked for three, but it, in order to who you see of me today, is it took more than just three, you know. It was a whole community, you know. It was a whole, you know, rooted, grounded foundation of family and friends and loved ones that developed who you see today, you know, who never let their hand go, you know, never let my hand go, even when I didn't do what was right or make the right decision. You know, my brother, Howard Cook, my sister, Wantel Cook. I mean, again, if I start naming people, I love everybody. And I'm just so very thankful for people not giving up on me. You know, community partners, Miss Carolyn White Washington. Every now and then I would just receive a prayer. You know, I can just go on and on about different people. Miss Diane Gardner. Again, if I start naming people, I'm getting happy just thinking about it, you know. But I'm just very thankful. I'm just very, very extremely thankful because I've had so many people to come into our lives, marrying a young Marine and, you know, just kind of maturing myself and being a better me. That didn't come by chance, you know. It came because, you know, of the love, the care, and support. And I'm going to say genuine love, genuine care, and genuine support. Everybody from the person who does my hair, you know, the genuine love, the genuine care, and the genuine support. I'm just very, very thankful, you know, for that. And that's who you are hearing today. That's who you are hearing speak. Because when I'm speaking, the voices of, you know, others, you know, the things that I say are things that I have sat and listened to, you know, and been obedient towards. That's what you hear coming out of my voice and my passion and what I do. It's not just me by myself. I'm just thankful for every peanut that anybody had ever given for my children or for my family, or we've never, you know, and I want to be able to return that, or for that to be reciprocated to everyone.
Wow.
And to others.
Well, you did a fantastic job. Tell us, what was the biggest obstacle that you had to face and got over?
School that I had to face and got over. Mistakes. Speaking, not thinking before I speak. That's a big obstacle that I have been able to overcome. That's really big for me. You know, I've learned to ensure that I am slow to speak and extremely quicker to listen. So that has been a huge obstacle for me that I feel that I'm still overcoming, you know, because God is not done with any of us, and he continues to work on us each and every day, you know, for us to, he wakes us up every day and allows us to hit the reset button to do it all over again. That's a special, special, you know, thing that a lot of people and us, we take for granted, because I feel that we shouldn't all have to have, especially as an African-American woman, we shouldn't all have to tell a story of demise and hurt and pain in order to be successful, or in order to put our story out there or let people know who we are. I shouldn't have to, you know, talk about, you know, most of the time, you know, the negative information will travel far. You know, people want to hear all the dirt. You know, I shouldn't have to tell dirt and throw stones at my brother or my sister in order to succeed or get to the next level. No, you shouldn't have to do that. And I want to make sure that people understand that's not the way that it should be. You know, we can't do anything alone. We have to connect with one another. We have to, you know, do what we need to do to connect with one another on a positive level and to have people to see who we really are. You know, that's the way that will help us to continue to move forward and make a change, because, you know, just like songs that we hear, you know, that it got to start with you. It got to start with us. You know, I look in the rearview mirror of my car when I'm driving, and I'm like, okay, how can I do better? You know, how could I have said something better? Or even, you know, the look on my face, you know, how can I, you know, practice, look in the mirror, practice smiling, even if smiling is not your thing. You know, most of the time as women, we come across certain ways towards one another, and it doesn't have to be like that. And then you wondering, you know, like, everything that I have, this is God built. This is God sustained. My marriage, my family, the connections, the partnership. It's not me. It's what God has done in my life. You know, and how he has, you know, turned things around. And just like anything, he did it for me, he'll do it for you and everybody else. But you have to be willing. You have to be ready. You have to be willing. And sometimes you may not be ready at that moment, but you need to get ready.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you said something that's so profound. You have to get ready and be ready and stay ready. When it comes to your business and your nonprofit organization and your family, you seem to check all the boxes. You have all the bases covered, and you have a good working relationship with your husband, which is important. Everything you're doing, it is nothing but God. It's God in your life. You put God first, and God has looked over your business, your family, your goals, your contribution to what you're doing. By you being a Washingtonian, you actually grew up in Washington, and you saw what Washington was years ago and what it is today. When I came to Washington in 1972, I had been all around the world, but I had never seen a city of blacks that was doing so well in Washington, D.C. in the 70s. It was called Chocolate City. And you had the black mayor and the black, I mean, everything was black. I mean, it was really ran by black. I mean, you got the chance to live to see that. And now the city is a gentrification. It's different, but it's still one of the greatest cities in the United States. It's the nation's capital. And it's truly the nation's capital today. It's way more. But you have the opportunity to be in Washington with your organization to do wonderful works, wonderful works. And the youth that you're working with are blessed to be in the year of 2021. 2021, that's amazing to be alive. And, you know, could you imagine being young in 2021? Like your daughter's 16. 2021, by the time she gets to be 60, 70 years old, she'll be traveling in space somewhere. I mean, it's crazy what you've had now in that fingertips. They have everything at their fingertips, but you are making it so that they are being recognized, which is a powerful thing for you. You are going unrecognized today. Tell us where the future holds for you and your organization. Where do you see the future at 5 years from now?
5 years from now, I see us helping more youth and expanding into other cities, because in our inner cities, I know people have talked about doing a lot with other organizations within the inner city. So 5 years from now, I can see us partnering with other organizations in inner cities so that we can figure out ways and have seats at the table that are already just waiting to sit in, so that we can communicate and talk and have those youth in empowerment positions and put them in empowerment positions and sit right beside them and continue to teach them on how to articulate, how to communicate, how to get your point across. You know, everything from their facial expressions to their body language, their tone. You know, a lot of times with us, we could sit at a table, and if our octave is just a little bit high or a little bit one way or the other, sways one way or the other, then people counsel us out. You know, they don't think about the fact that, you know, this person may be just very passionate about what they're doing, or, you know, so don't take their tone or their body language, or, you know, some people, they talk with their hands, and that can be intimidating to some. And then once you leave the room, they ask questions about you. Well, what you think? Well, what you think? Well, what you think? You know, come on, cancel that out. You know, let's think more positive about one another and think about, we don't know what the next person has gone through or overcome. So that mindset is just really very important. So 5 years from now, you know, I see us partnering with other organizations in the inner cities across the world, or across the, you know, the state, maybe in another country. You know, these things are things that are within our reach and within our grasp. So all we need to do is step out there. You know, I appreciate this. You know, I reached out to you And we began to talk. I just appreciate this. I appreciate that, you know, God laid it upon your heart to give us a platform. Those platforms are very important, you know, and we can't take those for granted. So I'm thankful for your time. I'm thankful for what you've done for the last 45 years and counting. You know, I ask God to continue to protect you and watch over you and allow you to continue to have many more years in what you're doing. But that's what everything that I'm saying is who I am, you know.
Well, thank you so much. But I appreciate your works, and I want to make sure that people know we're going to do everything possible to market this business, to make your brand household name. You mentioned a couple of people that I've already know, like Carolyn Washington. I've been knowing her for 35, 40 years. I watched her grow her business and her nonprofit. But I want to make sure that your works are known. That's what I met you at the big event, the Living Legacy Award at the Martin Crossways. I want to make sure they do something positive for you. But also, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk to Coach again, because Coach is a father in a home with his wife. Coach, tell me how it affects your son to know his father is in the home. I want you to tell us how that affects a young black man to know he comes home from school, he sits at a table for dinner, and his dad is there right with his mother. Do you realize that's not normal for a lot of black youth? The dad is not there. Tell us how that impacts your son and what makes you such a great father.
Well, I would say, you know, you learn from experience, right? So when I grew up, my father, who folks would consider him a sperm donor, you know, in these days, and he passed away, I believe, last year. He left when I was 6 months old, right? But I had a strong mother, didn't take him for child support, anything. Hey, she did what she had to do. Then I had a stepfather. She got remarried, and he stepped in just like I was his own, right? And I rebelled against him growing up in New York. I rebelled against him, you know, because you don't know as a young man that hurt knowing that your own dad doesn't want you, right? Whatever he is dealing with as a man, you don't know. All you know, you're a child. You're a young person, and you need love, right? So as I grew to become a man, I said to myself, you know, I want to be there for my kids, right? So as it goes with my son, you know, it's about, number one, showing love. Number two, you have to be a disciplinarian. Number three, though, you have to allow them to articulate, and you have to do as much as you can to be present for them, right? You know, even though business, you have to travel for business, work, coaching, everything else, you still try to have to make sure you're there for them, because I'm just a firm believer. A lot of the stuff going on in our communities now, we're seeing a lot of killings in the inner city, young people killing young people, and the reality is it's lack of love, right? Young people can see through the bull. They know if you're genuine and you're sincere. People can talk it all they want, but your actions, young people operate off actions, right? So if you fix the young men in the community, I'm a firm believer of that. If you fix the young men in the community, you fix the community, because no longer are you have these young men spewing monotonistic words to young women, calling them out their name, not treating them like queens, not opening car doors. I rarely seen grown men open car doors anymore. It's crazy to me. You know, we were raised better, right? So they're not opening doors. They're cussing them out, all this and that. They're quick to put their hands on a woman. If we can show real love to our young men, you fix the community, because now they'll take charge. Our community will look clean. They won't walk by trash and not pick it up, right? They won't vandalize and break into the old lady who worked her whole life, and now she's retired, and now you're breaking into what she done, you know, toiled for. You know what I mean? We really fix our community. But you got to be present. You got to show real love. And that's what it starts with.
Well, you said something so awesome, because what happens is people don't realize what it is to be a man, to be a young man, to be a respectable man. People don't open doors to people. People don't say, when I was young, my mother instilled in me to respect people, period, men and women, elders. Yes, sir. No, sir. I was in the military for 30 years. I was in the United States Air Force. You couldn't approach a sergeant, a lieutenant, without saluting him, without saying, yes, sir, no, sir. You have to give people respect. You can't go into a school and talk to the teacher and call her by her first name. That didn't happen. You called her by Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so. You didn't do that. You didn't walk into the class, raise your hand and say, hey, Judy, I want to. No, it's Mrs. So-and-so. People got away from these handles and how to address adults. And I can say when it comes to being in a relationship with a woman, people got away from being what they call a gentleman. I mean, you still have to be a gentleman today. You can't do things that I see these records and these stuff. That may be all that these fluff stuff to be selling records, but that's not how you can treat somebody for real. And then it has to do with do you allow someone to do that to you? A lot of these ladies or young women or whatever, they allow certain things to happen, which they can stop it immediately. The woman has the power to say, you can't say that word around me. You can't call me this. You can't do this. I'm not going to be this. I'm not going to be. Once you let somebody know how to treat you, they treat you like how you want to be treated. And that's what I instill in my children and try to let people know. You got to have respect for yourself first. And if you don't have respect for yourself, then nobody's going to have respect for you. But if somebody's coming at you disrespecting you, you're allowing that. They can't disrespect you unless you let them do. It's like anything with drugs, whatever. Most people that get in your company with drugs, they don't just start doing drugs. They ask you, do you mind? Do you mind if I light this joint up? Do you mind if I smoke in your house? They ask permission. They don't just come in your house and start lighting up joints. They say, do you mind? If you say you don't mind, then they smoke in your house. So I'm just telling you, but as a dad, you have something that is so profound because you're in the home. Your son can come to you. You can guide him hands-on. You don't have to, it's not like you're visiting him. You have visitation rights. You're coming by once a week or whatever. You're there every single day with your son. So, again, as a father, I want to take you
out. I would say, you know what, you're really correct about that because, you know, he's not because he's my son, but he's a very talented baseball player that has the ability to probably play on the next level. And we've been going through his the college recruiting process right now and, you know, trying to instill in him just be able to speak up for himself because this is his journey, it's his process. It only happens once. So, you know, this is your turn from going from a young kid to a man to embrace that and take charge of it. And just to watch that, you know, sometimes you think your kids are not listening and hearing. And just to sit back when we go on these recruiting trips, talk to these coaches, and they ask me questions. And I say, no, talk to him. And now to listen to him articulate what he wants, what's his desires, where he's trying to take this, you know, it warms you up inside, you know. It really warms you up inside. And now I almost forgot, we're about to have a boys and men's retreat. It's something my wife and I were talking about, and we're doing this with our baseball academy. We're going down to Deep Creek right before Christmas for a few days. And really, like, get away from the world, right? These young men about to go to college, you know, and it's basically prepping them all. Like, hey, this is now, we already did your transformation from a kid to a young man. Now we're doing your transformation from a young man to a man. And it's preparing them for everything that they're going to face. You're now home, you're now away from your folks. You're on your own as a man. These mistakes that you make that you probably cannot come back from, right? You make the wrong choice. No one can help you with that, right? It can end up, you end you up in prison. It could be death, right? you're out here with these young ladies, hey, make sure you know what's going on, right? You don't want to be accused for rape. You don't want to have yourself in the wrong situation. You want to be mindful. You're out there for a purpose. You know, it's still business, right? Every day is an interview, and it's a lot of stuff we're going to deal with them about that whole weekend, and some, we're going to teach them how to live outdoors, because just like you, a military man, I was a military man, I was a Marine my former life. We're going to teach them how to live, how to survive outdoors. We're going to talk about the traps with women as being athletes, right? Because we feel all our young men are handsome, good-looking young men, and, hey, they're going to be coming for them, right? So you have to prepare them. I love the conversation Deion Sanders is having with his college football team now to show them, hey, this is what happened. So I believe you, we really believe you got to prepare the young men for what's coming next, and that's part of preparing for what's coming next.
That is an excellent concept. That's going to be a good getaway for young men to learn from other men and to have you host that and produce that. It's going to be impact for the rest of their life. Sherry, I want to talk to you a minute about your responsibility, because you have such a big responsibility. You're raising young women. This youth program that you're doing, that's helping the youth and helping the organizations, but you also have in your own household, you have things. How hard is it to raise young women in today's environment?
As far as, let's remove the word hard. Let's just say, you know, on many days, it can be extremely challenging. One thing in raising our girls, we allow them, just as our son, to communicate, to have open communication. You know, there is nothing that you need to go get in these streets that either your father or I haven't experienced or gone through. And if we haven't, trust me, we have somebody in arm's reach that we can pull to come and communicate with you and talk with you so that you won't feel, you know, alone or feel like you're in this mindset where you don't have, I don't know, nobody understands where I'm coming from. Nobody understands me as a person. You know, a lot of times with, you know, raising our girls, one of the things that I remember our oldest telling me one time is that, you know, mom, you know, listen, you know, don't just keep telling me, but can you just listen? Now, again, it wasn't more so of what she said as it was how she said it, you know, and listening to how she said it, you know, it actually, you know, had me to pump my brakes a little bit, you know, because, of course, you know, when we are communicating with one another, it goes back to that, how we're communicating with one another, not what we say, but how we say it. And are we in a headspace to receive it? So raising our girls, you know, one thing we, you know, had them to do, and I talk with them a lot, had a lot of communication with them. You know, what you're not going to do is if you're going through something and you bring it across our, you know, our doorstep, you're not coming up in here and shutting the door and closing us out. And definitely not going to close me out as a mom, as a woman, because I've gone through some of the same things that you've gone through, and I want you to know we're going to have transparency here. You know, we're going to communicate, and I'm going to tell you, you know, look, okay, what just happened, or what's going on with you? You know, why did your tone change, or why did you come in the house with a certain type of behavior or body language? You know, hold on now, let's talk about this. You know, and a lot of times, you know, they don't like it. You know, I remember one time standing at the door like, oh, no, you're not coming up in here with that type of spirit. You need to cut that, you know, leave that outside. And then you can stand out there until you get yourself together, and then we can come in here and we can have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that again, we have to talk to our girls. You know, we have to be transparent with them. You know, as women, a lot of times, you know, even talking to my husband, I was like, well, you know, let me handle this conversation with her. You know, just like he would tell me, let me handle this conversation with him. You know, some things, mm-hmm. you know, we need to have that conversation with our girls, and it doesn't have to involve, you know, he's there. His presence is so necessary. But in the conversation, some conversations, we have to have that real talk conversation. It's a blessing to even be able to have a relationship with your kids. That shouldn't be taken lightly. You know, you can talk with your kids or, you know, my mom is cool and this, that, and the other, but we have to pray about our relationship with our children. That's a whole different situation. And you'll actually watch a change happen when we pray about the relationship that we have with our children. I hope I am.
You truly inspirational aspect to your kids, to this organization. Tell us how they can get in touch with you and where they can get involved with your organization. Just tell us the information on how to get in touch with you.
I am. My hashtag is hashtag I am Miss Sherry Christie. I'm on Facebook as Sherry Christie. I'm on Instagram as Miss Sherry Christie. And you can email me at christiesupport@gmail.com. It's christiesupport@gmail.com. And then you can call me, you can text me. My phone number is 202-365-2341. I am extremely passionate and extremely serious about support services. You know, how can I help you? How may I help you? How can I help you? How can I help your organization? How can we help each other?
Well, it's been a pleasure and an honor to have you on the Newsmaker Line, pulling your eyelids open. We pulled some eyelids open today. Give us your closing statement.
My closing statement. How about I'm going to let my husband give us a closing statement. I just love to, you know, allow him that space because that's important to me as the head of our household. It's important for us to give space. So I'm going to let him close it out. What's your closing remarks, son?
Thanks, babe. First and foremost, everyone keep God first. My wife alluded to it earlier, and we're big proponents of this. Never knock spirituality, never knock, you know, who people serve. All we say is that, listen, yes, you go to church for the fueling station, but if your tank is full and it's not having an impact in the community, then there's no sense for you to have a full tank. You're just going there to be seen, and it should never be about a show. It should be about the impact that your talents are having out in the world, right? And as you alluded to, sir, the impact of the next generation, what are we doing to create a platform, to create an avenue with the least amount of obstacles and traps for our young people, right, to aid them to take their seat at the table, to aid them to get to their greatness, no matter what that is, right? Everyone's greatness is different. They need to bring vocational stuff back into schools. Mechanics are great. You need everybody, right? You need teachers. You need motivational speakers. You need everybody. You just don't need a president, right? You just don't need a police officer. You just don't need someone with a title. You need everyone who has impact working their own lane, everyone supporting and embracing each other, pushing each other. I don't like the term the crab in the bucket barrel, but if we show love, you don't have to worry about that crab, right? That crab won't be stuck in the bucket. He'll be free to roam the land, right? We have to show more love. We have to know why we're here, and the purpose we're here is to be the navigation for the young people. God is our navigator, right? So we need to be the navigator for the young people. Some of us grew up in a generation, sir, where we didn't have guidance from the grown men because they were too busy trying to do them, right? But we need to now do the young people, right? And not do them in a derogatory term that, you know what I mean, you know what I'm talking about, but do the young people and where we pushing them to get to their greatness. And if we are all doing that together, we're all working our lane, if we're all doing what my wife is doing, pulling organizations together and all moving in the one direction, working their lane, we're going to do what we need to do with for the young people. And, you know, we'll have better communities for it, not just in Washington, D.C., not just in the DMV, but Dallas, Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Brooklyn, Bronx, New York, you know, Africa right now, how they trying to lock down the whole continent with coronavirus because they're chocolate people. Let's call it what it is, because they're not locking down Belgium. They're not locking down Europe. They're trying to lock down the chocolate people. So we just got to be vigilant. We got to show love, and we got to take it by the horns and work our lane for our community. And that's our closing remarks. I appreciate your time and your platform. Let's show more love.
Excellent, excellent. You said what they call a mouthful, man. You really have done this interview good. So, again, my name is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine, giving it to you straight talk, no chaser. Every morning, pulling your eyelids open. See you tomorrow morning. It's been a big one.